Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me?
Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say, it's nation time. You don't say that no more. Because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where we discuss everything about building communities of our own and taking control of our communities and coming together to plan our exodus away from slavery, suffering, and death. Tonight, we have our host, Time to Leave member, Sister Majida Muhammad, and she has a guest that we are all excited to hear. So I'm not going to delay. I'm going to open Sister Majida's mic. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Majida.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Carlton. How are you?
I am fine, ma'am. How are you?
Praise be to Allah. Praise be to Allah. I am fine by Allah's grace. I'm going to go ahead, because this sister has so much information that she wants to share, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. So, assalamu alaikum. I give the greetings of peace to our listening audience and introduce our guest and friend for this evening's show. She's a cultural anthropologist, urban farmer, and a steadfast champion from 1997 to present for justice, support, and the preservation of the legacy of Black farmers. She is also the co-founder of Farms to Grow, Inc., a nonprofit dedicated to advocating for Black farmers and other socially disadvantaged farmers throughout the United States. Farms to Grow's goals are to promote the sustainability and legacy of Black farmers, as well as sprout the next generation of small farmers, to document and disseminate farm history to advance the public's understanding of the important roles of Black farmers, and to improve the access to urban food markets, including schools, restaurants, and individual consumers for Black and underserved farmers. Welcome back to our show, my friend, Dr. Gail Myers. Are you there, Gail?
Sister Gail, if you can press the 1 on your phone dial pad, and that will put you in our queue, press the 1 on your phone dial pad. Sister Gail, if you can press the 1 on your phone's pad, go ahead and press that 1, and I'll be able to open your mic.
We know she's there, and hopefully she's not having
some
technical difficulties.
Right.
Yeah.
Try it again, Sister Gail. I don't see you. Your mic open. I don't see your. I need you to press that 1.
Well, let me just say also while we're waiting, Dr. Myers, she's a returning guest on our show. I think it was about 10 months.
Sister Gail?
Gail, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
Praise be.
Thank you for patience. My technology this evening is all thumbs, I guess. I see the dial, the keypad, but you couldn't acknowledge my my pressing, so I'm glad that I was able to work through that. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Sister Majid and Brother Carlton, for wonderful work and for always welcoming what we have to share with your audience. It's always an honor and a privilege to be here with Blog Talk Radio. I'm particularly excited this evening. I'm always excited about sharing the good news of Black farmers. But this evening, I'm sharing some information about resources that could potentially result in funding to support the regional food system operation, a local market promotions program, and a farmers market promotions program. So, this is a really critical moment, I would say, in the movement to repair what the USDA has done to Black farmers. You see the stimulus award, the new Secretary of Ag, Vilsack, has come in, and he's come in with a more humbled heart than he had the first time. So alliances and organizations that had formed maybe a lukewarm relationship with him before, now he's coming in asking for forgiveness and really trying to make amends and do better. And so because of, Vilsack moment, the misfortune of all the things that happened with COVID that created these stimulus funds, the world, the USDA in particular, but, the world's eyes have been on the reckoning for what we need to do for Black communities and Black farmers in particular. And so we are going to hopefully be able to take advantage of this moment. And one of those opportunities that Farms to Grow has been, we've entered into a consulting relationship with the USDA Ag Marketing Service to provide technical assistance, in particular to Black and Indigenous farmers of color. Now, there are 11 other organizations that are providing assistance, but Farms to Grow's focus in this particular grant announcement is to support Black farmers and other socially disadvantaged farmers. So it's an amazing opportunity, and I'm on the phone all the time, and I hope I don't forget anything, because I've been talking to farmers about these opportunities. But also let me, before I share about the farmers market promotion, the local market promotion, and the regional food systems partnership, let me say a little bit about the American Rescue Plan Act that did the debt payment relief to socially disadvantaged farmers. There was a call actually today, and the letters just started going out 2 days ago, May 24th, to farmers that have federal loans under the Farm Service Agency. And those letters will indicate to them that their loans will be paid up to 120%. So it's 100% of the loan, but it's 20% for tax, any tax liability that they incur, because this loan repayment will look like income. So, you know, of course, the IRS is going to say, where's my share of whatever the amount that your loan has been forgiven? So this is unprecedented. As we know, the USDA really stepping up to say, I'm sorry. So, as I said, this is a critical moment in the nation's effort to repair the harm that is done to black farmers. And so let me just talk about the three grants. I want to do the just sort of the overview, and I want to leave the time for the audience to ask questions. And actually, I could use this time to have office hours with you if you have a specific idea on a project that you wanted to share on the phone. So the first two are the Farmers Market Promotion Program and the Local Market Promotion Program. The Farmers Market Promotion Program is and let me also say before I go too far, because I don't want to forget this, these grants are wonderful if you're ready. But if your organization is too small to manage the grants administration, the reporting, the evaluation, I wouldn't advise it, because you can set yourself up for failure. But there are planning grants that are, you can apply for, and that if you have an idea and you haven't started implementing, but you want to plan for it. But even so, the planning grants take some administration and reporting, and if you're just a one-person operation, first of all, the grants don't benefit one person. It has to be a group. But just keep that in mind, which is sometimes a reason to combine efforts with organizations that may have more experience in some of the activities that you're thinking about, and part of that could also be a mentoring relationship. So the Farmers Market Promotion Program and the Local Market Promotion Program, they have a total of $76 million to give to award to communities that can prove that they want to promote the business opportunities and the marketing. For example, if you wanted to, I know that you all had the Buying Club, for example, in Oakland at one time, Majid and Carlton.
Right.
And so, if, for example, you all wanted to expand on that and involve more farmers, involve more communities, right, that could be a strategy that you would use, partnering with organizations and then maybe developing a marketing campaign. These grants, both of them, the farmers market, all three of them actually, are not for production. So this is not the grant to buy a tractor or milling equipment or try to buy seeds or crops. This is a grant to market and strategize on how to develop value chain food systems, strengthen your local community food system. So it's not about helping you grow. It's helping you come together and really take it to the next level. So if you're looking for a grant to buy a tractor or to plant, this isn't the one. The Local Farmers Market Promotion Program is, I want to use the exact language here. So, yes, the funds for both of these projects are to develop, coordinate, and expand local and regional food business enterprises, even value added. If you have a product that you grow and you want to, say, if you grow okra, but you want to take it into pickled okra and jar it or put it in cartons, this covers that. It won't pay for the growing of the okra, but it will pay for the value added. It will pay for leasing space. It won't pay for buying space or buying land. But if you need to lease a warehouse, this particular fund will do that. They will assist in business development. You want to do a feasibility study. You're thinking about, say, working with the local elementary schools. Well, it will allow you to hire someone that will be able to conduct the feasibility study, you know, go to the schools, interview all the partners and the players, and then produce a report and let you, you know, inform you as to, you know, how you can implement the strategy. You know, one of the things that's also covered in this is responding to technology needs. As we know, you know, many communities in rural USA towns don't have broadband. Farmers don't have broadband. So if you're looking at perhaps implementing a strategy that can connect your rural consumers, your rural farmers in some kind of marketing way, that would be feasible. You know, if you have farmers and they want to set up a distribution site and maybe take their food from the field to restaurants, well, this would cover the cost of obtaining your food safety certification, improving on your food safety equipment, and so you'd be better able to support a local food system. The real intent, you know, which is, it seems kind of antithetical to how we think about the USDA, but these particular funds are really for a self-sufficient model. It's for a community that says, you know what, we don't need Kroger's, we don't need Whole Foods, we got farmers, we have preservers, we have a relationship with a trucking company. All we need to do is get the food from the field, developing a distribution channel, box it, process it, and distribute it to our community members through either the buying clubs or farmers markets or CSAs. But it really is about that independent sovereignty thing. If done right, if a community can get all the players together, they really have all their food needs met. You know, because it will, you know, you can't isolate food from other kinds of needs. So an ideal project would also be looking at partnering with housing organizations, right? How are you going to make sure that people have fair housing? I mean, there is a way that you can align various aspects of a whole community and put that into how you're going to do a regional food system. For example, within the Black community, we have such high infant death mortality among Black women that it's not among, you know, white women. There are some alarming numbers with Native American and Latino women. But if you're going to do, say, a gardening program or a farming program and you're addressing the reproductive health of women, and so you're combining a farming organization that's going to provide food for, you know, a child care or, you know, you're looking at really shoring up various sectors of the community. Now you're talking about public health, you know, in addition to agriculture. And I think those organizations that think big like that, when they include all those entities within a value chain or a value, more like a value chain food system, I think it lends itself to sustainability. So, but it depends, again, on what your assets are. These grants I liken to when preparation meets opportunity. The Freedom Farmers Market got one of these grants once. But we had our market up for 3 years without any funds. We got our market up The only donation we got from Nativa, which is a hemp, some kind of company, a seed company out in Richmond, Virginia. We were able to buy a few tents. You all were there. We were just, meager funds. But we got off the ground, and when we were ready, the grant opportunity presented itself. But we had already run the market. We had already recruited our farmers. What we wanted them to help us do is train more farmers. So if you already, like you all with the buying club, you've already got a great network, let's say 100 or 200 consumers. You're already working with the city council. Maybe one of your members is on the city council, and there's somebody within the city government that can provide technical assistance. Maybe do some GIS. Maybe you're working with the school superintendent that is saying, you know, we really want to, we can't do all the schools, but if you can do just my pre-K, get us apples or get us fruit, you know. Those are the beginnings of a partnership where everybody is, and then let me add another entity to this. If you have a historically black college and university within your realm, and they want to provide students to do internship or to provide technical assistance or support for farmers, that's a whole, that's another partnership that is so ideal. You know, we have so many entities in our community that lie dormant because we're not thinking creatively enough on how to involve everybody, you know. Even say, for example, and you have to slow me down because when I start thinking, I'm thinking all out the box. Even, for example, where you want to bring women who may be formerly incarcerated or men who have been formerly incarcerated and they need child care, you involve maybe the senior center, right? You provide food, maybe the senior center, they set up some hours where they can provide 2 hours of child care while the parents are working on the particular program. And then you got your churches. So there's just so many ways that we can connect the dots. And I think the more dots we can connect, the more sustainable our projects can be.
Because just in hearing you speak on that, Gail, you know, and every time you make another connection, you know, you see how this can be cyclical, you know, where like you, everyone to some degree within that community has some inclusion. And now when you talk about grants, Gail, is it just a matter of wording or
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead and answer your full question.
No. I was just, is it a matter of the, so you said these funds are allocated. So then is it a matter of how you put your plan together, the wording?
Absolutely. You want to read the announcement, what it includes, what it doesn't include. You want to look at what's allowable as far as cost and what's not allowable. And I always recommend getting a grant writer, honestly. Someone that has experience writing grants. Hopefully they have, you know, received one or two winning grants. Because this stuff is really a science. And one of the reasons that this is an interesting moment for black farmers and black farming organizations, because they've never really had technical assistance like that. Like when we applied for our grant, we didn't have anybody to come on Blog Talk Radio or anyone to answer a call that we, I mean, yes, the grant officer, but they wouldn't really review our proposal and say, hey, that's not a good idea or that's a good idea. We do that at this point. Our Farm to Grow, we're able to do that through our contract and all the other organizations who are partners. So the level of technical assistance right now is phenomenal. Unfortunately, it doesn't include grant writing, and it doesn't include, after the grant is received, the grant administration. So there are some ducks that have to be put in a row, really. But it's still, if you can get together, you know, I would recommend, and certainly I would suggest to, if you haven't your DUNS number or your grants.gov, there's certain precursor items that you have to have before you can even upload your application on grants.gov. So these applications are uploaded onto their website directly to the U.S. Well, directly to the grants.gov. They screen it, and then they send it to the USDA. But, yeah, you got to have your DUNS number, grants.gov number, and EIN number. These are mostly for new entities that may be applying for a planning grant. But even if you're planning to do your business development, those items have to be in place. But you'll see them when you read the announcement. It'll tell you, you got to do this first. You got to have that in place. But, you know, one thing that is also possible with the regional food systems grant, the regional food system partnership is up to $1 million. You know, all of these are matching. So you got to have a 10% match or 25% match. And the match depends on if you're applying under the Farm Bill, the 2018 Farm Bill, because they combined $22 million from the 2018 Farm Bill that was left, $7 million from the stimulus. So that comes to like $76 million. So if you're applying for the Farm Bill funding, the match has to be 25%, and it has to be a cash match. If you're applying under the stimulus funding, it has to be 10% match, and it can be in kind, like, you know, donating staff, or if there is an accountant in another organization that will donate professional expertise, you can count that as in kind.
Okay.
Cash is actually cash. You can't convert in-kind hours to cash. It is when a funder actually gives cash to the program. So those things are realities. You have to do the match, get all of your DUNS number. But in general, to answer your question, yeah, it is really a matter of writing the best proposal. But this time is very different than any other time. Because
and you know what I was going to ask you that, Gail. I was going to ask you what's
different.
What's changed with regard to, you know, then and now? What's changed?
Well, what's different is that before there's usually just the Farm Bill money. Now there's the Farm Bill and the stimulus money. So there's three times more funding for these programs. And so there's a lot more funding, which means there's a greater opportunity. Certainly there may be more people applying, but maybe not. But there's a greater opportunity to receive a grant. We are recruiting heavily grant peer reviewers. So one of the other roles that we have is to get reviewers who are Black, Indigenous, that can review these applications with the kind of heart and sensibility that often is not included in the grant review or demographic or profile. So there's some.
Now, what would they do? What's the importance of that role?
The reviewers, they actually read the grant. They'll review your grant. I was a grant reviewer and actually a grant manager for the USDA, and they review the grant based on the grant guidelines. But one of the things that I remember experiencing the first time I was a grant reviewer, I could understand what an applicant was writing about. I mean, they may have maybe misspelled a couple of words, but you could see it was in community. And so a fellow reviewer would have said, well, you know, look, I can't even read this sentence. I don't know what they're talking about and who are these communities. And so when you have – so my job, that's what I ended up doing a lot on that panel, was interpreting – what the other reviewers couldn't understand about these communities. And they got it. They go, oh, right. And so what, you know, the reason, yeah, the reason why you I recommend a grant writer, because it's very competitive and they'll hold you to a different standard. You know, they can tell when the church secretary wrote the grant and, you know, a grant reviewer that's making $25, $50 an hour wrote the grant. And then they judge that review from maybe the secretary that may have, you know, repeated the sentence twice. But you can see from the letters of support, you can see from the way that they've been into the community, their history, that they're going to get this done. But they don't get funded oftentimes because the quality of the application is lower than the professionally written grant application. And that's basically how they went out. They, as in the larger nonprofits, because you have to be a nonprofit entity for these. You can partner with a city or a corporation or a public entity, but you have to be a nonprofit to have the funds go through your organization business. So, yeah, this is a good time. This is a good time. I have already sent four black grant reviewers up to the grant review process, and I'm sure others are also sending them. So we will have more, you know, black and brown reviewers. Oftentimes, I don't remember how I got nominated to be a reviewer, but, I mean, it was not unheard of to have a panel of 15 reviewers and two black, or black and a Native American. I'm looking across the table for a guy, and we're doing, you know, the head nod thing, you know.
Right.
Wow, here we are.
And then here we are at that time, speaking of, here we are the majority of applicants, right?
Yes, in many cases.
And
underrepresented. Not necessarily the majority of applicants in some grant cycles, but certainly well represented in the applicants that are denied. I'll put it like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have an important moment right now to really seize these funds to work collaboratively. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So if an organization wants to apply for that $1 million and they want to do a regional food systems grant where they look at maybe the southern part of Georgia or the northern part of Georgia, right? Or maybe combining a couple of areas, Georgia, Alabama, within that, and they want to call it a region, and they're including farmers, they're including truckers, they're including, so it basically includes the public and the private. So if they want to apply for a fund, say an organization that can manage that size budget, what they can do is subcontract with a smaller organization, doesn't have the kind of experience, doesn't have the grant writing background, but bring them in to be a part of the, in some way, a part of that grant so they can get funding even if they don't apply. So that's a strategy, right? That's
so
a
then
strategy
they get
like
region.
Yeah, yeah. So that, so the big, so in other words, who, we're sitting around a table and we're looking and say, okay, who got the biggest car we can all fit in? Okay. You going to drive us because we can all fit in your car, and then we're going to ride. So that means which organization has a budget of $1 million that can deal with this grant and bring all of us in. So that means everybody's involved within that particular idea. Now, these grants are for 2 years and 3 years if you want to do a planning grant. A planning grant for the farmers market promotion and the local market promotion is $25,000 to $200,000. And the planning grant for the regional food systems partnership is $100,000 to $250,000. That's for 24 months. If you want to implement a program, implementation program for the farmers market program and the local market the local promotions program is $100,000 to $750,000. That's what you can use to implement. And if you want to implement a program under the regional food system, it's 250,000 to a million, and you have 36 months on implementation. So there's a
wow.
lot of potential. I certainly can't tell people what to do, but you can see, you can review the grant, see where your assets are. You know, if you're
mm-hmm.
if you're interested in really developing a well, I'll just share with an idea that we were going to do, but we just, you know, honestly, just we got so many projects. But, you know, so we got a refrigerated truck. And so now what we need is a warehouse because we're expanding our growers. And what we need
mm-hmm.
to do is have a funder let us lease, pay for the lease of a space. We develop out our food cooperative. We develop out our Black Farmers, California Black Farmers Cooperative. We bring in some lawyers and folks with some infrastructure development expertise, help us figure out how we're going to structure that. And we're going to get the food from the field, but we need a refrigerated unit. We'll bring it back
mm-hmm.
to the put it in a refrigerated unit, maybe on site, or put it in a truck, bring it back to Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, you know, we have our CSA, we'd have restaurants, we'd have schools. So in other words, there would be so many entities that would benefit from this
right.
refrigerated unit, from the expansion of reaching more Black farmers within California to bring their produce. I mean, that's just,
wow.
you know, one particular idea. You can, you know, if you're looking at a, you know, specific market, I have actually been talking to a group of Black folks in Maryland that are fishers. And so talking to them about the fish market, the fish industry, and how they could include that as part of the local food system. Well, this grant will pay for your research on the fishing, your cost, where, you know, we're going in the future, you know, what's the mid-tier value chain look like? Do you, you know, how far out are the boats allowed to go to become, to say they're local? You know, all those ideas around developing the infrastructure could be, you know, funded through this particular idea, particular grant. If you want to do research on even how to evaluate how well a project is doing, you can even do that. Say if you're looking to find out if you're expanding produce access to child care centers results in more children getting less cavities or more parents, more women who are pregnant, you know, having less, fewer infant mortality. You know, you can do some research on that, but certainly it has to, you know, have a nice structure and plan. But
mm-hmm.
it's a pay kind of idea. But again, we're talking about really trying to deal with a food channel that if the next COVID, just think about it like this. You remember how the shelves were empty for a lot of food? Some stores closed. We couldn't get shipped because they were shut down. Well, if that happens
right.
again, and we can't get our meat, but we got sheep farmers and we got cattle farmers
mm-hmm.
up the street, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's figured mm-hmm. out how to integrate them into our local food system because they're taking their meat to the elevator and they're shipping their meat out of the country or out of the state. So a real local food system would look at all the food producers. Who's doing dairy? Who's doing beef? Who's doing who's doing wheat so we can get our bread? Who's doing this? Figuring out how to bring all of them, get that produce, factor it into a value chain system. You're going to have a warehouse. You're going to have trucks. You're going to have workers. And figure out how to make that asset in our community feed us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other marketing piece comes in where, you know, people get confused. I'm often baffled when I talk to people and they say they don't want organic or they don't want pesticide-free. They say, no, I want the pesticides. I don't know where people have gotten that. But maybe we do a marketing campaign. People understand the importance of eating natural. Moreover, You know, they have kind of been hand-feeding us this climate data, but we all see the signs. Every time I hear something about an ancient fish that is discovered that hasn't been seen in a million years, or all these huge sharks. Did you see the mega shark that somebody photographed? That those things are cute, but they're piquing interest. Like, is there a portal open? What's happening? You know, what are we doing to our food system? You know, we know the waters are warming. We know the Antarctic is warming. We know the ice is melting. That's changing our whole climate. Summers are going to be hotter. In California, folks are storing water. They're filling jugs of water because of drought, and they know that the city may shut off water. But all of this is related to how we're behaving on this planet. And agriculture, farming, how we feed ourselves. If we don't factor in the fact that we may not have enough water, how do we grow, you know, dry land rice? Drought resistance, that means we'll play more perennial. But we really have to pay attention. And I don't think we're paying enough attention because they're just giving us a little bit of climate stuff here and there. But if you look at all of it, you can see signs of we don't know how much time we have. We know that if we're trying to feed ourselves, we really need to figure out how we can be self-sufficient. In many ways, this opportunity that is provided itself here can be self-sufficient. I mean, so you get one of these three-year grants. You don't always have to be beholden to the USDA, but your organization is right at a place where you've been doing the work and you just need a little bit of support. This, if you've been doing the work and you feel like you're prepared, this is the opportunity. So apply for one of these grants, even at a planning stage, if you're wanting to do more research. See what happens. You get it or you don't. It's still a good experience. But if you get it, you got 3 years to enhance your programming and take it to the next level. And just might be the real model that is sustainable and that we can teach. There are already tons of sustainable models in the Black food community that we know that work. You know, we know tight-knit communities. We know local. We know integrating all of our values into our practices. It works. And so all we have to do is just take that to the next level and then join larger forces. So now it's, you know, me and my family's farm, but then there are three or four other farms up the street, and we can form a cooperative.
Right.
And say it's a small rural town, and you got a close relationship with the mayor, or the mayor might be a farmer, then you look at that as your regional food system. Y'all might have a farmer's market on a farm, and you might want to do research to figure out how to grow more farmers. That's what we asked for our USDA grant, and it has really resulted in us growing more farmers. I think at that point it was a 2-year grant, so the grant is over, and it really allowed our farmers market to benefit from the marketing pieces of it. So they allowed us to have a marketing budget, not very much of one, but it was more than what we had before. And so but what I want to do, I think I've given a good sort of overview, but I want to leave some room for questions, and I want to send folks to, there's a couple of things. You can go to farmstogrow.com. There is a link to TA. You'll see TA for technical assistance, and it'll give you information about the grant. It'll take you to the link, and if you're interested in getting some technical assistance from us at Farms to Grow, there's a form there that you can fill out. And you can fill that form out, there's a number also, our 510-379-8600. You can also feel free to call Farms to Grow. But let me leave some time for questions and ideas if folks have any, and concerns.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Brother Carlton, are there any callers?
Yes, ma'am. And before I bring that caller on, I just want to remind our listeners, if you have a question or a comment to join the conversation, press the 1 on your keypad, and you will be in our queue, and we'll bring you in the conversation. So we have a caller that's been waiting for a while, caller with the last 4 digits, 1498. What is your name, and where are you calling from? Caller, 1498. Caller, are you there? Caller with the last 4 digits, 1498. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Melva, and I'm calling from California.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, Mia?
I'm fine. I've been listening, and I heard a lot of things that reminded me of food and shelter. Some of the things that Gail was talking about, you know, how you partner with this organization and that organization, it was like, here's the food and now here's housing at shelter. And then, so all of that is the circle.
Yes, it is. So
for those that don't understand that, that is like a Sankofa circle. That's what it is.
Yes,
this is the right time for this. And we have a lot of young farmers, just young families getting back to the earth, separating from the
right. Hustle
and hustle and bustle of living off in big cities, bringing their families down and coming to the earth, becoming stewards and stewardesses of the earth. Now, they have
and you know
all...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Majida.
No. I was just going to say you brought that up, and that was interesting that you brought that up because that was a thought I had as well. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Myers, because you've been in this arena with regards to black farmers and food justice for, you know, well over 20 years. And, you know, just with this movement, you know, of younger people coming back to the land. And, you know, we've had several shows, where we had the Freedom Initiative, the Freedom Georgia Initiative, where you had 2 young women who I believe purchased 90 acres here in Georgia. And then we have our brother, Brother Farrakhan Ali, that, you know, has his 100-acre project where he's, building that circle of community and making sure, you know, the sustainability is there. And, you know, just more people are just taking that approach to come back to the land and seeing how that's where, you know, our true freedom and sustainability is going to be. And I wanted to ask you, what do you see or what in your mind, you know, having, you know, been involved in this for so long, what would you attribute that to? It's like a sudden rise of the importance of land ownership and learning our legacy of farming. What do you attribute that to?
I think it has been building over time, Majida. I remember in 97 when I did my first literature review, typed in black farmers and Pigford came up. That was about it. And then when I started looking for actual literature on how black farmers, you know, farm, what their sustainable practices were, there was very little. But over the last 20-plus years, as more organizations have come online, if you will, that are supporting black farmers, there was probably 5, BFAA, National Black Farmers Association, Federation, Ben Burkett, not a lot of groups back in the 90s doing work with black farmers, but now I dare say there are probably about 50. Many of these groups are you know, geared toward young people. Many, the women are leading the charge with the seed saving and the going back to land. And I think it is, in many ways, what you, Mia, started out by saying with the Sankofa moment, is that we're going back. We are firmly rooted, looking forward, but we know that we've got to grab our African agrarian and our, you know, community values with us to move forward. And I think that's what it is. I tell you, I have seen more, I'm a reviewer on another grant cycle, and I have seen more applications of young people who are herbalists in particular, and they are really serious about ways in which to heal from trauma, to heal the land. More applications of young men coming right out of college, or, you know, really not trying to go into the big hustle and bustle of corporate America. They want to go back to their family's land. They're graduating with degrees from FAMU, Tennessee State, North Carolina A&T, Grambling. And they're finding out, you know, there's 5 acres on Uncle So-and-so's land or 10 acres on Grandpa's land. And they're going back. And I think the time, you know, if we could utilize some of the support that's available in these fund resources, for example, to continue to build the village. I see also that the new farmers are aligning themselves with various networks, which is what it will take. You know, there was a moment when right after the enslavement period, well, that's all we had was each other. We had our networks, we had our communities, but over time, you know, some communities, there's only one black farmer, right? And it's surrounded by other white farmers, or there's only one or two in this whole community when we used to have the whole community supporting us. In a situation like that, we have to continue to build our village. We can build it and continue to build it with newcomers, new developers, new residents, but we can also look at who else in our community are aligned with our African agrarian values. Who are those entities? And that's how we continue to build our village. You know, continue to advocate for our own land. And the more we can be successful, the more our young people will want to join on. You know, for they haven't wanted to join. They have seen the failing black farmer. They've seen the disappointed black farmer. I use Mr. Scott, for example. Mr. Scott in California, you all know Mr. Scott. Well, for years we've been working with Mr. Scott, his son and his daughter, neither one of them wanted to farm. He was, you know, worried, like, you know, he was trying to get one of his nephews to farm that would come to the meeting. We asked Mr. Scott, and who's going to take the farm? Well, now his son has seen Mr. Scott go from 2 acres to 22 acres because we've been working with Mr. Scott, and he's got so many markets now. His son is calling him almost every day, so their relationship has grown.
Now
the son and the daughter both are fighting over who's going to take the farm. They have to look at that because they see success. So our work is facilitating the succession. So the more successful stories we have, the more our young people will see that as an option. And so that's why these programs are so important, that when we get the opportunity, and I will say this, you know, it probably goes without saying in our community, but maybe it doesn't. If you get these funds, do the right thing. Make sure that what you say you're going to do, do them. If anything happens and, you know, some entity, some partner backed out and you could do it, you know, don't spend that money on something else without government authorization. It's a quick way to get in trouble. And we also want to make a good track record on black organizations creating and facilitating successful programs, so that when we send our applications, when we go up to the USDA asking for money, they already know we do excellent work. They won't have to say, well, that last grant they got, they didn't do nothing with it. Uh-uh. Make sure you do the utmost, whatever you've stated in that grant, do that. And if you need support, contact your grants administrator.
That's right. Yeah, make our word bond. That's right. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give you a moment, Gail, to talk about your upcoming show with one of your guests that are already here.
Yes. You mean the Wise Women show that we have on Saturday? Yes, we're very excited. We have Sister Mia Melva X is going to be on our panel of Wise Women. We have Yolote Kenny, who is with Cure Me Farms out of Richmond, California. Dorothy Barker, who is out of Oxford, North Carolina, and Michelle Lee, who wrote the book Working the Roots, is going to be the moderator. And I'm going to say, this is just some medicine that we've been needing. I have a niece who's now dealing with some health problems, and I remember on our rehearsal call saying, and I was thinking this, but I said it to the team, Where she's in Florida. I said, who's my medicine women in Florida? Because she's dealing with something the doctors had never seen before. She's got an infection. They tried 7 to 8 different antibiotics, and she keeps getting a fever. But I know we've been praying. But I also know that what I remember growing up is that we always had an elder woman, medicine woman, who knew herbs. And somebody would always go to her. And that's a tradition that we need. So we are honoring this particular program, Wise Women. We're going to learn around the ways in which, you know, they know how to be in earth and community and who they are and some of the gifts that they've inherited. And they're going to be in conversation with each other. Started adding up the years. There's over 240 years of wisdom on this panel of these, and that doesn't even include Michelle, I think.
Wow.
So we are, we're in for a treat. You all don't want to miss this.
How do we participate in that, Gail? How do we get connected in that?
Well, for right now, there is an Eventbrite, and I believe you can get that Eventbrite through our rhythmsoftheland.com page.
Okay.
You can go there and you'll see a drop-down menu for events. And then let me, you know, I had some trouble myself. But yeah, that's what you can do. We are also,
okay.
I believe. It's
going to
be a Zoom. That's right.
Okay.
Yes, it's going to be a Zoom. And let me see. I'm clicking here. I don't see it on here.
Go to rhythm.
Of the land.com. But actually, I don't see the link on the web. They forgot to put the link. But it's also, if anybody's on Instagram or Facebook, it's also there.
Okay.
And I do apologize, but I think we forgot to put it up there this time. But we're doing the curated event as part of the film that's going to be released, Rhythms of the Land. And so we're sharing knowledge that's so important that we have related to Black farming and our Black farming legacy. And the Wise Women event is just one of those in honor of our community and our land and our wise women.
Yes, ma'am. And I'll go ahead and pull that information down and post it, Gail, to our listening audience.
And
I hear them playing the music. I thank you. Thank you. Always
it's been so fun.
Gail, always.
Don't hesitate to call. As a matter of fact, I'll give you all our number. It's 510-379-8600. If you want to call our office, speak with me directly about an idea you have, and I'll provide whatever assistance that I can.
Okay, yes, ma'am. And again, that's 510-379-8600.
Yes, where the ghosts are, childhood haunts me. Walk the road,
thank
my forefathers walk. Climb the trees, my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to when you came. My family tree, my family life. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Take me to another land. Take me to another land. Make me forget all the
down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peace Street. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. Why my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. By brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He